Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 150. We are in 1 Samuel chapters 8, 9, and 10. If you have done the reading, I'm proud of you. Good job. Then everything that I'm going to say is going to make perfect sense because you have done the reading. If you haven't done the reading, go do the reading. It's just three chapters today, 1 Samuel chapter 8, 9, and 10. And as we're going to see for most of 1 and 2 Samuel, it's a ton of narrative. So it's not hard reading. You just got to keep up with the story. And so go do the reading. Come on back. And let's jump into our context clues for the day. Here's a big question that we need to ask. Is Yahweh anti-king? Okay. Is Yahweh against the idea of Israel having a king? Or is Yahweh pro-king? It's kind of confusing, to be totally honest. You could make an argument that Yahweh is for Israel having a king. You could also make the argument that Yahweh's against Israel having a king. So is it bad that they ask for a king? Is it okay that they ask for a king? Like, what's actually going on? We don't want to misdiagnose what's going on. I've obviously heard these passages preached a lot. And so want to bring clarity. And that's honestly, we want to put 1 Samuel chapter 8 in 8 through 10 in context of this wider theme in the Bible. The entire Bible is actually also answering this question for us. Is Yahweh pro-king? Anti-king. And one of the big rules that we like to follow when we're reading the Bible is that scripture interprets scripture. Okay. So it's very, very often that in the middle of reading something, we'll go read a corresponding passage of scripture to kind of help us to interpret the scripture that we're currently reading. So we're going to bounce around a little bit. Before we start bouncing around, let's throw in some nerdy nuggets. Okay. First, if Samuel had not appointed his sons as judges, could we have avoided Saul as king? It's a great question. Okay, so if you start reading 1 Samuel chapter 8, 1 Samuel chapter 8 begins with this line. When Samuel became old, he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel, the name of his second, Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba, yet his sons did not follow in his ways, but turned aside after gain. They took bribes and perverted justice. So Samuel's sons are some no good scoundrels, okay? And we're going to see this as a theme. So Eli wasn't necessarily super corrupt, but Eli's sons were very, very corrupt. Here we see Samuel's not corrupt at all. But his sons are going to be corrupt. And then later on, we're going to see David and his inability to be a great dad. And this is going to be a consistent theme. Because remember, the Bible doesn't say thou shalt not commit polygamy or thou shalt not live a polygamous life. Polygamy is wrong. But the Bible is going to tell us in narrative form that polygamy is not God's ideal. Okay, the stories are full of drama, full of jealousy, full of infighting. And so the Bible's not telling us that nepotism is necessarily wrong, but the Bible is using narrative to show us that it's easier to be a prophet than it is to be a dad. It's easier to be a judge than it is to be a father. It's easier to be a king than it is to be a good dad. And so there's this theme where the narrative is kind of throwing shade on a lot of these characters by the behavior of their children, okay? And I want to make sure I communicate that with lots of nuance. It's not saying that the parent failed or it's the parent's fault. It's just saying this isn't good. And it's a consistent theme that men that are called by God to lead in powerful ways end up not crushing it when it comes to leading at home, leading their families. Okay. So next kind of little nerdy nugget we got. the elders bring up the issue of kingship in response to Samuel appointing his sons as judges. So the desire for a king doesn't come out of the blue. It's not out of thin air. The context for the people of Israel asking for a king is the wickedness of Samuel's sons. Okay. So like we gotta kind of go like, okay, like these people aren't necessarily evil. What's the issue then? There's two issues. Number one, the motivation is not just we don't want Samuel's boys leading us. It's also we want to be like the other nations. And that's what God is going to take offense to. Second, God is going to say, hey, Samuel, don't be downhearted. Don't be disheartened. Don't be downcast. It's not you, AKA or your sons, that the people have rejected, but really they've rejected me as their king. Okay. So let's re-ask our question from earlier. Is God, is Yahweh anti-king or pro-king? And the reality is that he's neither. He's not against Israel having a king or for Israel having a king. Yahweh is pro-theocracy. He is for himself being their king and appointing a vice regent who acts as king but defers to Yahweh as king. Okay. How do we know this? Well, because God sets up Adam and Eve to rule and to reign. Okay. So God is not against sharing power. He's not opposed to empowering other people or to empowering people for roles of leadership. He's not opposed to men and women taking royal offices and serving him and reflecting his government in that way. He's not opposed to that at all. He's opposed to nepotism, idolatry, and anything like that. Okay, so how do we know that Yahweh isn't 100% fully anti-king? Well, Genesis chapter 49, verse 10, Jacob, in blessing his sons, right there flat out tells us that there's going to be a king, okay, that comes from one of these 12 boys. Next, Numbers chapter 24, verses 17 and 19. This is when Balaam, the false prophet, he's been paid to prophesy against Israel, but he can't. So he keeps prophesying for them. And what does he say? Numbers chapter 24, verse 17 says this: I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. He will crush the foreheads of Moab, the skulls of all the people of Sheth. Edom will be conquered. Seir, his enemy, will be conquered, but Israel will grow strong. A ruler will come out of Jacob and destroy the survivors of the city. So there's a whole prophecy about a king. And who is that king? We know that king is the Son of God, whose name is Jesus. So God, Yahweh, is not anti-king. He's actually pro a member of the Godhead being king. And he's very, very clear. Hey, they haven't rejected you, Samuel. They've actually rejected me. Next passage is really huge. So Genesis 49, 10, huge. Numbers 24, 17, 19, huge. And then Deuteronomy 17, okay? Deuteronomy 17 kind of lays out stipulations for the king, okay? And the one that I love is found in verse 18. When he takes the throne of his kingdom, he is to write for himself on a scroll a copy of this law taken from that of the Levitical priests. So he's saying, hey, there is going to be a king, but the king needs to be submitted to what? The Torah. And what is the big message of the Torah that we're reading out of the book of Deuteronomy? That passage was Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 18. And the big message of Deuteronomy is that Yahweh is suzerain and Israel is vassal. So if Yahweh is suzerain, which means he's king, he's the overlord, and the king of Israel needs to write their own copy of the covenant law, then that means that that king is submitted to the covenant of Yahweh as the suzerain, as the king of kings, the Lord of lords. Last little nerdy nugget. is Saul then is appointed to be king? Okay, so we have to ask a question. Okay, why does God give a donkey herder for a king as opposed to a shepherd? Okay, because David's going to be a shepherd and Saul is herding donkeys. Well, the answer is very, very implicit. Okay, it's because the people have been acting like donkeys. What are donkeys a symbol of? Stubbornness, stuck in your ways, a lack of trust, just stubborn as a mule. And so this first king is the kind of king that's fit for donkeys, okay? If you want to act like a donkey, God's like, all right, since you want to be stubborn and you want to be hard to deal with, then I'll give you a leader who's going to match that energy. Again, it's the idea of contrapasso, where the punishment fits the crime. Because the donkey herder doesn't work, this paves the way for our guy David, who's not a donkey herder, but he cares for sheep. He's a shepherd. He's a pastoral leader, a loving leader. So context clues gave you a couple of nerdy nuggets. One more nerdy nugget is that in 2 Kings 18:5 and in 2 Kings 23:25, those passages both state that Hezekiah and Josiah are great kings. Therefore, God's not anti-king or pro-king. He's pro a king that has submitted his ways to him and a people who are appointing a king from a place of righteous motives and a place of clean hands and a pure heart. Okay, here's our timeless truth. And this is a painful one, but it's that a love for God is not hereditary. There's not just like a guarantee that because I'm in ministry, that my kids are going to love God. Actually, being in ministry may be a way to lessen the chances of your kids loving God, okay? And so we're going to see this already with two dads back to back, Eli and Samuel. They have sons, and those sons do not fear the Lord, do not love the Lord, don't love God's people. And this is a massive, massive problem. They cannot be leaders. So children must be discipled by their parents. They must be cultivated by their parents. They must be parented well. You cannot assume that just because they're around that they will get it. They must be intentionally cultivated to have a love for Yahweh, a fear of Yahweh, to know the scriptures, to love God's people, and to be able to lead with integrity and not just leading because my dad gave me this job or my dad said I could work for the ministry. Okay, so we have to be intentional as leaders to really have an eye out for unintentional nepotism. Not that nepotism is an issue. It's just God's hand doesn't always fall on our kids. And clearly Samuel wants his kids to be something that they don't actually want for themselves. And it creates a tension. It creates tension between him and the elders, and it created a tension in the last generation. So a love for God is not hereditary. There's all types of things you can get from your parents. A love for the Lord has to be cultivated. It has to be nurtured, okay? It is not a guarantee. And so enlisting your kids into the ministry, if they're really not ready for that, will actually do them more harm than good. So our timeless truth for the day is God will always send a Samuel when there's a Hophni and Phinehas that are ungodly. And then what's sad is that history literally just repeats itself. One generation later, here Samuel is in the same position as Eli that I don't know if he judged Eli ever, but it'd be wise of all of us not to judge those who have failed before us, but to really go, whew, if they can mess up in this area, I could probably mess up in this area. And let me humbly learn. Let me find out how to avoid these pitfalls. So a love for God is not hereditary. Children require discipleship, cultivation, and they require that we parent them really, really, really well. This is why when we get to the New Testament, Paul's advice to Timothy and Titus is do not appoint people to be leaders who don't lead their own household well. Don't appoint people to be leaders who are not good dads,
We're not good moms. We're not good brothers, sisters, so on and so forth. So the reason that leadership is not set up based on productivity or talent, actually based on other metrics, is so that we ensure that if the next generation is going to lead, they're leading from a pure place. All right. We got a lot of context in there. We got some nerdy nuggets in there, and I was able to give you a timeless truth. Hey, if you're a pastor, if you're a leader, ministry is difficult, but man, parenting's harder. Spend the extra time parenting, please. Like, the best way for us to lead the generation, the next generation, is by leading those of our own household. I do think that the narrator is writing this in the text, letting us know that this is a weakness for the prophet Samuel, but it shouldn't be a weakness for you or me. We've got hindsight as an advantage here. We got to step up as leaders, as husbands, as fathers, as moms, and really, 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 really be here, be there for our kids. All righty. I'll see you tomorrow for day 151. We're going to be in 1 Samuel chapters 11 and 12. All we got is 2 chapters tomorrow. So show up ready to lean in and see what the Lord would say to us as we read his word. I'm so proud of you. If you're on a streak, don't mess it up. If you're not on a streak, not too late to start one. All you need is 2 days. That could be today and tomorrow. Love you guys so much. Day 151 right here. It's going down tomorrow. Peace.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com? I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.